Welcome into another edition of the Dana and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick, and for this edition of the podcast, I am joined by the legend, Brian Snow. But we also have another special guest because it was a big night at the Cintas Center. He is a national college basketball analyst, Rob Doster. College Hoops Talk, is that – give us the correct name here.
Well, it's College Basketball Talk. But I'm not a legend, though.
Well, Snow has requested to be called a legend on the podcast. You can request – prefixes if you'd like. We'll gladly give you one, but you have to choose your own. I'm the legend of Latonia. Snow is, the legend just in general. So you can take whatever you like.
I don't really want to be affiliated with Snow and anything that he does. So I'm just going to go. We can go with Rob. That works.
Okay. Fair enough. That's what I was shooting for originally. But, you know. All right. Big night at the Cintas Center. Xavier, 90-83 over Villanova. Finally, they started off 0-6 in the Big East against the Wildcats and pulled out a big one. Just from your guys' perspective, obviously I was there in person and it was nuts. How did it come across on TV?
It looked like it was awesome. I was texting a couple of people that were there and just being like, "What? How would you kind of rank that compared to other environments that you've been in?" Because the one time I was in the Cintas Center was like 2013, I think it was, when they played Duquesne. Mm-hmm. When TJ McConnell was still there.
Sure.
And I think Xavier ended up winning by like 25 in that game. And it was still rocking. It was still crazy in that building. So I can't even imagine what it was like tonight. You know, when you have number one Villanova coming in, one. And then second of all, like, you kind of whip up on them a little bit. So I'm sure that was a fun place to be tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it came through well on TV. I know Daniels was there. He was texting me saying, like, "Man, this place is rocking." So it seemed like it was a good show for all involved.
That's exactly who I was texting as well, Snow.
Good sources, guys. Good sources. I would say the biggest thing that was weird to me is, one, all week it felt like a shootout week, but actually bigger. I think altogether, since I've been doing this, I've had like 8 radio spots that I've done in the 6 years, and this week I did 6. And some of them were from places that had nothing to do with Cincinnati or Philly. And so that was interesting to me. And then even before the game, about 12 minutes before tip-off, the place, there was not a seat open, which is very, very rare for the Cintas Center crowd, because you have a lot of Republicans, shall we say, that like to spend a lot of time in Duff's or what other watering holes there are throughout the area before they walk down to their seats. So usually a slow arriving crowd was there very early and loud tonight. Want to start big picture here, since we got Rob on to talk about the national scene. Rob, the Big East, the way it's being viewed nationally, I think everyone who's been watching this conference this year feels it's a good conference. It's a difficult conference to play in. It's a deep conference. My feeling is that the people who have been watching it overrate it compared to what the national view of it is. And I don't see any way that the committee would put both Xavier and Villanova as one seeds. I think they're going to battle it out for the only one seed that the Big East will get. What would be your take on that?
I kind of agree with you there. I don't think that you can have 2-1 seeds from the Big East at this point. As far as, you know, how the conference is viewed overall, I think that early in the season it looked like it was a really great league. Like, it had the potential to be something pretty special when Butler was playing like they were, you know, kind of a top 15 or 20 team, and Providence looked like they were destined to, you know, end up being somewhere around the top 10 or the top 15, and Georgetown wasn't terrible yet, and Marquette still had a little bit of promise. Like, it looked like it was going to be a really, really difficult, balanced, tough league. And then, you know, like I said, everyone started kind of falling off. And, you know, it's frustrating watching Providence play at this point, knowing how good Chris Dunn and Ben Bentel are. They just can't figure out a way to kind of make that work. And Georgetown, you know, Snow, we've texted about this before. Like, I think Georgetown might be the most disappointing team in all of college basketball for me, because I think there's enough talent on that roster to be a top 20 team. So when people say that the Big East is like really good and really tough, I think they're just kind of remembering what we were talking about a month and a half ago, and they just have stopped paying attention since then. Because if you've been paying attention, then I don't really think you can say that this league has been all that good outside of the top two.
I think there's depth in the league. You know, the issue is, I think you've got teams like Marquette who has Henry Ellenson, You know, I mean, you've even the teams at the bottom in middle of the conference all have players and have all recruited at a high enough level to be difficult. You know, we talked about the Georgetown. They present matchup problems for Xavier just because of their size and length at each position, even though Xavier's done well against them and beaten. Or, I mean, you know, the second time around, they did well against them and were able to beat them. I still think that's a tough matchup for them. I think St. John's is a difficult matchup for Xavier. So I think that's a lot of where, if you're watching this conference and rooting for a team night in, night out, it gets frustrating at times because you're not able to pull away for 17, 20-point wins all the time. Rob, looking at Xavier's resume, obviously it looks pretty great at this point, but one of the knocks and one of the things on our message board that people haven't liked has been their inability to pull away from some teams and finish games and go on those big runs and win by 20 or 25 when they have a team down by double digits in the second half. Is that an issue for this team that you've seen? I mean, Snow says if that's your problem, then you really don't have a problem. What would be your take?
I tend to agree with Snow there. You know, if you're winning games, I don't think you can really complain about winning games too much. And, you know, I don't think that affects you for your resume either. The thing about the RPI that people don't really like is that it doesn't take margin of victory into account. So when you look at things like Sagarin ratings and KenPom and all that kind of stuff, like that's why Xavier is going to be a little bit lower than they are in the RPI, because the RPI is like basically just strictly like, did you win? Did you lose? Who did you play? What's their record? What's your record? All it's like just straight wins and losses. And it has nothing to do with, you know, whether you beat Dayton by 29 or you only beat St. John's by 7 or whatever it was when you guys played. So I don't think it's really that much of an issue. I mean, you probably feel more confident in a team that was winning by 25 every single game, but there is something to be said for a team that's been through battles a little bit too. You know, they've been tested. It's not like they've been able to just kind of coast through conference play. When you get into the NCAA tournament, like, you don't want to be that team that doesn't know how to function when you get into a close game.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, I don't know who was saying it the other day on one of the national TV shows, but the point was, I think it was Jay Billis said, you know, I don't really worry about how you perform against bad teams because bad teams aren't in the NCAA tournament. You know, you're not going to have to put away a bad team in the NCAA tournament. You're going to have to win close games against good teams, and obviously Xavier has done that. Looking at this win specifically, Snow, I'll start with you on this question. Where does, I mean, we don't do these things in a vacuum, but where would you guess, if you had to, Xavier's going to be ranked when the new rankings come out? It's tough to do that without seeing what happens the rest of the week, obviously, but could they slide up to that, like, number one, number two spot potentially?
I don't think they could get up that far. First of all, they got to win at Seton Hall, which is not going to be easy. But assuming normalness, and in this year, normalness is not normal, goes on, I would say probably more in the 3-4 range than in the 1-2 range. Kansas is going to be up there. You know, Oklahoma won big tonight. People really like them. People are going to like Carolina. So I don't think they can get into the top two. I would say 3 is probably the ceiling in my estimation for what people are going to put them at, especially the way Michigan State's playing, where I think Michigan State could jump them because, myself included, a lot of folks think Michigan State's the best team in the country, so they're going to have a lot of things going in their favor as well.
Rob, what's your take?
Yeah, I think 3 is probably the ceiling. They're not going to jump. As long as Kansas wins and Oklahoma wins, they're not going to jump either of those two teams. And I think that if everything kind of holds on Monday when I put my rankings together, I think I'm probably going to have Michigan State number one because I'm on the same page with Snow there. Yeah, I don't like agreeing with you, Snow. It really bothers me, but like you're saying a lot of smart stuff today. So
I'm the smartest person on earth. Just ask me.
Oh, time out, Rob. We appreciate you coming on the podcast, but we're going to have to hang up on you now because we do not compliment Snow on this podcast ever. That is specifically against the rules.
Like, here's the thing, man. Like, I hate doing it. It doesn't make me feel good. Like, because his ego is already out of control. But, you know, sometimes he says the right thing. And you know what? Just the next time, ask me the question first, and then I'll say it. So he's got to agree with me.
I've been trying to do that most of the night, but I figured I'd get Snow back involved for a little bit.
He was right over there for a little while.
Yeah, he was getting quiet. Rob, just, you know, obviously,
I was letting you two go.
We appreciate that, Snow. Wish you'd do it a little more often. we haven't talked to you yet about this Xavier team. What what stands out to you about the Xavier team? What's your favorite thing? Because I think that's been one of my favorite storylines about this team this year is if you talk to different people, I mean, in the past years that I've covered this team, you know, it's like, okay, let's talk about Jordan Crawford. Okay, let's talk about Tu Holloway. Okay, let's talk about Matt Stainbrook. You know, it's always been kind of a guy, Samaje Christen. It's always been a guy or two guys or a certain aspect of this team. But when I ask people this year, their answers are all over the board. So what would be your favorite thing?
Hey, Rick, did you know that Matt Stainbrook was an Uber driver?
I have been told that. We're still working to confirm. Hopefully we'll get Matt on the softball podcast this summer and we can ask him.
All right, go ahead, Doster.
I'd heard that rumor before. You can confirm that?
Not yet. We're going to try to this summer when he comes home from Germany, hopefully, and comes by for the Xavier softball game.
You think he's driving an Uber in Germany?
Oh, actually, great story about that. They did. He signed a deal as soon as he got over there with a rental car company and the Merlins, you know, the Krailsheim Merlins. They had a big, like, Matt Stainbrook Krailsheim Merlins in his jersey logo on the side of the car. It was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, that's real. That's not even a joke or a lie.
What's this world coming to?
So that's what he's doing. Like, that's his niche, huh?
I mean,
he's going to be a basketball player that drives people around in cars.
Actually, believe it or not, he wants to, like, open his own restaurant. And he was telling us on the podcast this summer from the softball game that he had this idea where he's seen it in other places where it's like the bar is a stock ticker. And, you know, the stuff that gets drank a lot and frequently, the price goes up. And the stuff that's not getting drank, the price goes down. And then instead of having happy hours, like, for 15 minutes randomly throughout the night, you'll have stock market crashes where all the drinks are really cheap. And he had it all figured out, man. He's a really interesting dude if you get the time to talk to him about anything other than Uber.
That's actually a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I might have to steal that. Don't let him come to D.C. and see that I took that idea from him.
Yeah, no, we were talking because, you know, everyone had hammered that storyline, the Uber storyline, so hard. We were talking about some other things this summer during our softball podcast, and I screwed up all the audio, so people barely listened to it. But, yeah, anyway, so that was what he told us. He had it all figured out. He wants to open a restaurant after he's done playing basketball and touring the world.
Well, good for him,
getting back to the question.
Yes. Yeah.
As Dave Pasch would say, back to the game.
So, back to the game. So what do you like about Xavier?
There's really three things that I like about this team. The biggest one is that they're almost kind of matchup proof. You know, they have a lot of lineup versatility in the fact that they can, you know, when they want to go big, they can go big with kind of Jalen Reynolds and James Farr and, you know, playing Blewett at the three. And if they want to go small and play that kind of, you know, hard to guard four around one lineup, they can put Blewett at the four. You know, they have a couple different guys that can kind of handle the ball. They have guys that can shoot. If you want to get athletic on the wing, you can put McCurr out there with Edmondson. Like, there's different lineups they can have where there's not really, like, an ideal mismatch for them, if that makes sense. I like that about them. I like that they can play multiple defenses. They can use that 1-3-1, which is, you know, proven to be pretty good. I think that's kind of what they did late in the game against Creighton. Like, the one thing that they don't do well is guard those kind of lightning quick dynamic point guards like Maurice Watson. I mean, Allen Iverson.
Yeah.
So I think when you use that 1-3-1, it can kind of nullify that a little bit.
I've referred to it as like a really good prevent defense. I know everyone, you know, complains about the prevent defense in football, but Xavier kind of uses it to, like, yeah, you might hit a three or two occasionally, but you're rarely going to go on a big run against the 1-3-1.
Yeah, because they have so much length that it just gets really hard to run offense against it. You know, when you have a 2-3 zone, you can run offense against that. You can even run your man offense against that. Like, there's almost like a continuity to it. When you run that 1-3-1 with, like, where the guy on the top kind of plays and how long their athletes are on the wings, you know, it's frustrating to run offense against that. And you can kind of take a team out of a rhythm. And I think more than anything, that's what that defense does. It's not like a great defense that you can play. It's just something that you could throw at people to get them out of what they want to do. And the other thing I like about Xavier is they are tough as hell, man. Like, I don't know if there's any team that I would actually want to get in a fight with, but I know that I definitely do not want to get in a fight with Xavier. Like, those dudes are just tough, and you're going to come out of a game that you play against them with some bruises and maybe like a bloody nose or whatever. So I like that about them too. It seems like I remember one guy that was close to the program told me that they almost care more about being the tougher team than they do about winning. And I kind of like that about them.
So, Doster, you're telling me you wouldn't want to fight Jalen Reynolds?
No, not even a little bit. Like, I wouldn't, if he was mad, like, I wouldn't even want to be in the same city as him.
Well, I'll just let that linger. I would do a pay-per-view on that, though. I'd be all in on an HBO pay-per-view for Doster and Reynolds in the cage.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, if you could pick one guy in the country that to have Jalen Reynolds fight, who would it be?
Rico Gathers.
Kimbo Slice.
Rico Gathers against Jalen Reynolds. That would be good.
Because they're both mentally unstable. Yeah. And, like, I think Rico's a little bit naturally stronger, but Jalen has the length advantage. And since styles make fights, I want to see if Rico can get inside Jalen's jab. I just think it'd be interesting.
Yeah, Rico'd have to bully him. He'd really have to, like, mush rush him right in the face and just maybe ground and pound at that point. I don't know. Because Reynolds is throwing haymakers from, like, 7 feet away, man.
But, like, here's the thing about that, though. Like, Rico Gathers looks strong and like, he's jacked and all that kind of stuff. But, like, I'll never forget this. Do you guys know who Troy Macker is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right, Falling so as a Habit. That's who you started with.
Oh, okay. That's how you pronounce his name. Okay.
Yeah. So can I,
hold
can
on.
I
how did you I, think you pronounced it?
Like Mashir or something. Okay. Like that.
French. Got it. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you guys a little bit of a story here that I don't think I've ever actually told publicly before. So you ready for this?
Do it.
All right, so me and Troy were roommates for like 4 years, right?
If you can top CJ Anderson's story about Drew Lavender that he told last night on this podcast, you'll be winning, Doster. I'll tell you that much.
I don't know if I could top it. It's a pretty good story, though. So you guys might not know this, but Troy like actually trained and fought MMA for like 3 years, right?
I do remember him talking about that, yeah.
He's got like an actual like record. Like he's fought fights in an octagon, right? So he's not really like a dude that's going to like back down from people. And I got this one buddy. We'll call him Breezy. I don't want to say his real name because I don't know if he'll get in trouble. He's married now, and so yeah, we'll leave it at that. But so he's a huge Syracuse fan, right? And Troy's a Georgetown fan. And we all like went out drinking one night, and we come back to our apartment, and we're a little bit tipsy. And Troy makes a joke about Syracuse, and this dude stands up and let me kind of describe him for you. He's about 5'7", right? But he's jacked. He probably weighs 220 pounds, like 7% body fat, and he's got a huge beard. Like he's a little bit out of his mind.
Did you say his name was Napoleon? I'm sorry.
So Troy's sitting on a couch, and this dude Breezy stands up and slaps Troy across the face as hard as he can. And Troy just kind of looks at him, and like you can see he's getting a little angry, and he kind of laughs and makes some other, like, wise-ass remark, right? And then Breezy, like, slaps him across the face again. And, like, I'm like, all right, we kind of got to get this settled down a little bit. So I take Breezy and put him in another room and, like, give him a beer or whatever. And, like, he chills out, right? So I go talk to Troy. I'm like, Troy, like, why didn't you react? And he just kind of looks at me and goes, look, man, I've been in a lot of fights, but there's one thing I've always been told. You never fight a crazy person. And that's why I don't think I would ever want to fight Jalen Reynolds because, like, he's out of his mind,
well,
right?
And in addition to that, he's built like Dwight, like a smaller version of Dwight Howard. Like, that's the other issue there. In addition to being mentally unstable, he's also the guy you don't want to fight because of his
physique. Exactly. So, like, you don't want to fight a crazy person. You don't want to fight a person that's, like, 6'8" and, like, 240 pounds of muscle. And when you put those two together, like, no thanks. I'm getting out of the city. Like, I'm leaving. Put me on the next flight out. Like,
Who's the pay-per-view matchup for JP? Who would we most want to see JP fight? Because that's the second meanest dude on the team by far.
I want to see him fight Grayson Allen.
Oh, I think he'd whoop Grayson Allen's ass.
I don't know, dude. Grayson Allen.
Grayson's a tough dude, man.
He is, but how big is Grayson?
He's like legitimately like 6'3", 6'4".
185?
I mean, I haven't stood next to him since he's been in college, but I'm assuming he's very well put together.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe. I just don't know. Grayson seems a little like he seems more fake tough to me. He seems like
no, he's legit. Like he's like a dude now.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'd like to see it. I'd pay money to see it, but I've still got my money on JP, I think, in that fight. I was hoping you would go somewhere other than Grayson Allen, but that's fine.
I think that, but like how opposite are those two dudes than the fight would be between Jalen Reynolds and Rico Gathers?
Yeah, we'd be appealing to all pay-per-view audiences, Rick. You got to think business.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's you got like a lightweight, a super heavyweight. I mean, yeah, you're right. We're filling up the card pretty well. I tell you what, he's sitting out, but the third person I'd like to see most fight on the Xavier team would be Rashid Gaston. And by the way, this podcast will be canceled for tomorrow by the Xavier administration, and Doster will have to fly into Cincinnati to do a reflection session with us, probably. So I don't know how we got on this podcast, this topic of the podcast, but let's get back to the game. Just a few things. What was the biggest takeaway from tonight's game for you guys? Who stood out?
For me, it was one that Villanova is actually capable of missing 3-point shots against Xavier. I didn't actually know that was possible.
Revelation.
Yeah.
Although they did hit like 7 in a row to end the game to keep it like somewhat respectable, which was hilarious. Because the entire CentOS Center was just losing it, even though Xavier was up by like 15 with a minute left. And they're like, play defense!
For me, the biggest thing was just the way Edmund Sumner was getting into the lane. And he wasn't perfect with it, but he made the right decision.
Yes.
Like 75% of the time. And when he's doing that, you know, good luck. Now, he took some threes that I think missed by about 7 feet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, he was really good otherwise. And when he's doing that against a good defensive guard in Arch and whoever else was guarding him part of the time. So I think that was the biggest thing for me for the Xavier perspective and what they did.
We talk about Sumner's athleticism so much because he continues to impress people, and not everyone's seen him play yet with him only being a freshman. So again, that's a big topic of conversation when people first see him play because of those wow plays that he'll make. But the big underrated storyline with him, Snow, has absolutely been his improved feel as the season has gone on, because he's been able to get into the lane since the season started. The difference is the last few weeks, he's really been making the right play more often than not, whether that's, you know, bumping into a guy to draw contact and get to the free throw line, which he did great tonight, or knowing when to pass it out and who to pass to.
Hey, Rick, you got a guest in Doster. Would you let him talk instead of going on a filibuster?
Yeah, Doster, what do you think?
I think everything you said is 100% accurate, Rick.
Suck it, Snow. Continue, Doster.
I was pretty impressed with what I saw out of J.P. McCura. I like him as a player. It's nice to see where he can kind of step up. Like, he took over that game for a little bit in the first half.
Yeah,
and it's nice to see that they have that weapon. Like we know Xavier has so many weapons and so many different ways they can beat you. But it was, you know, I don't think we've seen a game where he's been quite that good, at least not this season.
He launched 9 shots off in 12 minutes in the first half, which was, I mean, with Xavier's team, that's the thing. I mean, you have Trayvon Blewett and Miles Davis also taking shots, and Edmund Sumner. So to get 9 shots off in 12 minutes with that crew is pretty impressive work by JP, and his energy tonight was extraordinary. As soon as I saw him coming out of the locker rooms, slap boxing with Remy Abel, I knew he was fairly jacked for this one. On the Villanova side, Chris Jenkins was really good. I thought the biggest thing for me was that Xavier completely took Archie Diacono out of this game. Last time they had Abel on him, this time they used Sumner and Austin and a combination of a couple other guys, and it really worked out for their favor. Snow, is that just a thing where the matchups were a lot better because Sumner was in there, or off night for Arch?
I would say more off night for Arch. I mean, you think of the first game, I mean, he's launching transition 25-foot threes. They're banging in. He's hitting, you know, contested half-court shots. They're going in. I mean, I don't think it was necessarily Remy didn't guard him well. I just think he made shots, and he didn't do that tonight. So I think that was a big key, but also Xavier kept Villanova out of transition for the most part.
It's easier to do that when you actually score, though.
Yeah, I mean, that when the other team has to take the ball out of the net, they're not going to get out in transition.
No doubt. Guys, we also have some questions in here off of Twitter, so I don't know how many of these are good, but I'll try to sort through them. How huge were Kaiser Gates, Larry, and Remy's minutes tonight, Snow? What'd you think of those guys? I thought Kaiser was great.
Yeah, Kaiser was tremendous. The play that stood out to me the most from Kaiser was once he got isolated on the elbow with Phil Booth, and Booth tried to shake him, couldn't do it. Launched a contested shot that missed, and I think Xavier got the rebound, or maybe it was the one that they kicked away. But, you know, it's just the fact that Kaiser Gates can stay in front of Phil Booth says a lot to me about the type of defender and the type of player Kaiser Gates is going to be. And then he needs to get stronger, but he's a naturally good rebounder. He loses the ball some. But when you can play defense like he can, you're showing signs of being a good rebounder. And then, you know, they keep telling us he's a great shooter. Obviously, he hasn't shot the ball well this year yet, but, you know, the numbers really don't lie from practice for the most part. So I think he's someone he's really developed during the year, and he can they can go to Kaiser and know they're going to get something very good out of his production.
Rob, did you have anything else to add on those guys? Larry, Remy, Kaiser, anything?
I mean, I think Snow kind of hit the nail on the head. I just, one note to add on Remy Abel is that I like seeing a guy on that Xavier team that can kind of shut somebody down on the perimeter. And I think he's the one dude that can really kind of do that.
Yeah, and I think sometimes the matchup, it depends a little bit for him. But the thing I've come to realize about Remy is if I don't really notice him during a game, it typically means he played pretty well. He did his job because he just has that very specific role. What do you think was the loudest moment of the game? JP with the rebound. Yeah, that's the one. I would agree with that. JP ripping the rebound away from Chris Jenkins, dishing to Kaiser, him, you know, getting the and one against Jenkins and Jenkins fouling out. I don't know if you guys have any opinion from watching that on TV, but in person, I definitely thought that was the loudest play of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough to tell on TV. It was that. Can we talk how stupid that was of Chris Jenkins?
Terrible decision. I mean, that's what happens when you get a rebound ripped away from you by JP McCarr. I think you get pretty frustrated and do dumb things.
I think it was Cal. The one time I heard it, Cal said it to Anthony Davis, like when he picked up his second foul in the national title game, I believe. Like, Anthony, this isn't football. You know, like, there's going to be more than five scores in the game. Let him score.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Like,
you're the best player on the court trying to save 2 points.
Yeah. Like, Kaiser missed one free throw, so he fouled out of the game to save 1 point. That's just not good.
Not good. Not good at all. Does JP have to carry his balls around in a wheelbarrow tomorrow? Yes, he would. I would say that is probably accurate.
I don't think we can expand on that.
Yeah, I think I'll just let that go.
Great analysis. Who was that?
I'm not giving out Twitter names for that. After such an energy driven game, how do they not have a lull on the road versus Seton Hall? Will be tough game emotional wise. Snow, I think we've talked about this. I don't think this team really rides the waves of the season all that much. I think they'll be fine at Seton Hall.
No, I do. I will say I think the schedule sets up well for them in that the Seton Hall game is on Sunday and not Saturday, so they can take tomorrow off, kind of revel in it, so to speak, and then it's like, all right, get back down to business and have a normal 2-day, you know, Friday, Saturday preparation that you would get between your typical Wednesday to Saturday. So I think it does set up well for Xavier in that regard. Now, I don't think Seton Hall is a particularly great matchup for them. So, you know, if they lose at Seton Hall, I don't necessarily think it's like, well, they lost because of the emotional letdown. I think it's Seton Hall's a pretty good team. They're going on the road to face them, and they've got a pro in Isaiah Whitehead. So
game for Seton Hall. Like, Seton Hall's on the bubble.
They make their season right there by winning that game.
So it's not. I don't think you can say that this is going to be a letdown game if Xavier loses. I think that this is a situation where you're looking at I don't want to call it a playing game because I think that Seton Hall still has a chance to get an even if they lose this. But this is an easy way for Seton Hall to lock up a bid and kind of make Selection Sunday a little bit less stressful. And you better believe that they're going to be ready to play in that one.
Guys, I've got a question sort of relating to this, and it's about Jalen starting to take over a little bit more as the go-to center and Farr maybe falling back to the pack a little bit. But in addition to that, I just wanted to bring up the play of the bigs tonight. I thought they haven't been scoring as much recently, but I don't think this team needs that. I mean, they don't need to play through the post like they did with Stainbrook. They don't need them to be go-to options on the offensive end. To me, you know, Jalen hasn't been screwing things up, hasn't been making plays that will hurt the team. He's just been solid, and when he's solid, he's really good and tough for the other team to deal with. And James has maybe, you know, not been playing as ridiculous as he was early in the year, but he's still playing pretty well. What would be your opinion, though, on the actual question from the Twitter poster? Is Jalen kind of starting to turn it on and take over and outplaying James now?
I don't know if he's outplaying him, but I think that it's definitely a good thing when Jalen Reynolds is, you know, playing the way that he has been playing and kind of playing the way that he did tonight. And, you know, I think when you look at them together, they combined for 40 minutes and they finished with, what was it, 21 points, 8 boards, 5 offensive rebounds. Like, all you really want out of those two guys is almost just effort, you know? It's not even like you need them to be Matt Stainbrook, like you said. You just play hard, get some offensive rebounds, commit a couple hard fouls, like set a tone in there, get some dunks, and be a guy that's available when Edmund Sumner makes those drives. And I think they did very well with that today. And, you know, it's nice. I always think it's good when there's a little bit of competition for a spot within a certain team, because it kind of pushes guys to keep getting better. Like if James Farr sees Jalen Reynolds getting a little bit better and getting more minutes, and he spent a little bit more time on the bench, that's a little bit motivation for him to kind of pick it up a little bit. So I think it's a healthy thing to have within the team, and I don't necessarily think that it's I forget what the actual question was, but Snow, all right, I'm going to pass it off to you.
Yeah, I think you answered it sufficiently. Snow, you got anything to add with the bigs?
I think it's almost a game-to-game thing now, where like one game James seems to play better, one game Jalen seems to play better, and that's natural. I mean, and they didn't score much, but I don't think they really shot the ball much either.
They didn't really miss shots.
Yeah, the guards just dominated the game, so it was what it was. I think, you know, it was just not a big guy's game today, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah, Reynolds was 4 of 6 and Farr was 5 of 7. And I thought both of them played their role and did what they needed to do. I think another thing that's been underrated about this team, you got to think Matt Stainbrook was playing more minutes last year than either one of these two guys. And these two guys are in much, you know, better condition than Matt Stainbrook was. So the wear that his legs were taking, and it seemed like, you know, he played really well down the stretch last season, but you know that had to take a toll on his body, and there were some games where he looked exhausted. These two guys have really gotten a lot of rest this year when you factor in they're only playing 20 minutes a game each. So I think that's something that'll help this team going forward as well. Any other takeaways from this game specifically before I go back to big picture stuff?
I think it's good that Edmund Sumner looks like he's kind of, like you said, learning how to play a little bit. I don't really necessarily buy that you could take too much away from a single game in a season that, you know, we're 28 games in at this point. And I think that Xavier got a win they needed. I think it was kind of a monkey off their back, so to speak, because there's almost like when you keep losing to a team the way that they were losing to Villanova, like there's almost a mental part of it that kind of wears on you and makes it a little bit difficult to get over that hump. And I think that was a big that more than anything, more than the result, than Chris Jenkins' play, than Edmund Sumner. I think that just getting that mental hurdle out of the way was probably as important as anything that actually happened on the floor in that game.
Yeah, I agree with Rob. That's the biggest thing, is just beating Villanova, something that it looked like they'd never be able to do.
Yeah.
And not just beating them, like,
yeah,
handle them
pretty good. They beat them pretty good.
That's the other thing. If Villanova doesn't hit those threes, Dan and I were texting about this after the game. If Villanova doesn't hit those threes at the end of the game, I mean, this is kind of a blowout. Xavier handled them in the second half, and Villanova kind of kept it close by getting hot there at the end. And I know the fans didn't like that, but when you really go back and watch the game, I think you'll feel of how dominant of a performance that was in the second half by X. Okay, Rob, since we got you here, it's you know, not easy to do, but what's your best guess, Xavier seed-wise, and what do they do in the tournament this year?
I think it's going to come down to whoever wins the Big East tournament between them and Villanova. If it's one of those two, I think that they're going to end up being a number one seed, and the other one's going to be a two seed. And as far as what they do, I think I'm going to have them in the Final Four, man. I mean, that's going to be kind of a trendy thing to say after this performance, but I've been saying it for a while. Like, I love the makeup of this team. I love the roster build, the roster makeup. I like the versatility. I like that they can match up with a lot of different teams and play a lot of different ways. And I don't know. I think there's not a lot of teams in the country that, like, I like this season. And it's not what we talked about that today. But I think that Xavier's one of the teams that I do like, and I do like the way that they play. So I think that they can make a Final Four.
You said you also like Michigan State. Are there any others that stand out to you, you know, nationally, that teams you do like and think are destined to make a run?
There are teams that I think can make a run. Like, I think Kentucky can make a run with the way that Ulis and
Murray
and Jamal Murray are playing.
Yeah,
if,
I do too.
If Emil Jefferson gets healthy and gives Duke, like, another big body instead of just Marshall Plumlee, I think that that's a team that can make a run. I think Cal is starting to play well. I mentioned it today. I think Utah might be one of the most underrated teams in the country. Like, there's teams that I think can make a run. There's teams that I think are going to do well if they get the right matchup. There's teams that, you know, if they can figure it, like if Maryland can figure out what the hell they're doing, like that's a team I think has as much talent as anybody in the country. So there are teams that I think can make a run. Like, but if you're telling me who am I going to pencil into the Final Four, like regardless of what the matchups they're looking at, will be. I think it's only going to be Michigan State and Xavier at this point, which feels weird to say, you know?
Yeah, I think Xavier fans will probably agree with you there, Snow. Do you want to make these predictions, or do you want to hold off on all this since you'll be joining us, obviously, a lot more going forward?
I mean, I would say, depending on matchup, I think if they run into – like, I still think Kansas is kind of a weird matchup for them because Frank Mason's going to cause them problems. So if they're, like, in a bracket with Kansas, I'd probably pick Kansas. But I think they certainly have Final Four potential, and you know, they just have so many different answers in positional versatility that it's tough to say, like, this specific team gives them a problem.
Snow, you thought that I was being too hard on their chances for getting a number one seed last podcast we recorded. So let me ask you this. Assuming they win out here the rest of the regular season, they lose in the Big East semifinals or finals, they don't win the Big East tournament, what seed do you think they are?
In a vacuum, I'm guessing a 2.
Okay.
But, you know, that obviously depends on, you know, the Big 12 tournament and the ACC tournament, clearly. But that particular scenario, my best guess would be a 2.
Well, what other scenario did you have where I wasn't giving Xavier enough credit? Because I said if they win both these games, they're going to be a 1 seed.
No, you were talking like in the present. I was like, well, I think in the present right now they're a 1 seed. But I think other teams are going to pile up more of those elite wins that are going to bump them down if they don't get Villanova.
You misunderstood my take. My only take was that the Big East is not getting 2 1 seeds. So whoever wins, basically Villanova was going to be the 1 seed for the Big East if they won this game no matter what. But since Xavier won it, now Xavier has a chance to play its way into a 1 seed, I think, if they win the Big East tournament now.
I would agree.
Doster, is that pretty much how you see it as well?
Yeah, I don't think that this conference can produce 2 1 seeds without something crazy happening across the rest of the country. Like if Michigan State loses out and Kansas loses out and Oklahoma loses out and I don't even know who else and Virginia loses out. Like I think there's a chance that you could get 2. I don't think it's necessary. Like it's not impossible for that to happen, but you need other stuff to be going on in order to get 2 1 seeds out of the Big East. And I'll tell you what, man, can we get Villanova Xavier on a neutral floor in New York City? It's in New York City this
year,
right?
Madison Square Garden.
Madison Square Garden.
I'm hoping, just for the sake of entertainment purposes, that is the finals matchup we get to see this year. Because tonight was also fun.
You both know that's not happening, right?
Yeah, I know.
I know. It's going to be Marquette and St. John's, but
I don't know if there's a better venue in the country than Madison Square Garden for like a big college basketball game where you get 2 fan bases in there.
And the thing is, it could be empty and it still feels amazing. Like it still feels so cool. But when it gets packed, like because Xavier's fan base is going to show up this year. They'll be like the year that Creighton went there and with McDermott and everyone knew they had a good chance to win it. Creighton fans were everywhere. I mean, it felt like they took over every single bar we went into that year. I think that's exactly how Xavier fans are going to be this year. So I agree with you, Rob. I think if you get those 2 fan bases, which will both be well represented, it's going to be absolutely nuts in New York.
Now, granted, last year, you know, it's a little fuzzy for me. I was well hydrated for about 72 consecutive hours.
Did you ever make it over to Madison Square Garden, or did you stay at the Barclays
the
whole time?
You know, I was rotating between Barclays and MSG.
That's right. And we saw you, but we never like actually saw you afterwards.
Yeah, the odds of me speaking by the end of the Big East sessions were not good.
Late nights. Xavier always played the late game.
Yeah. So, but from what I remember, like the atmosphere last year was really good at MSG.
Yeah.
And what they had like 14,000, I think, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
So I thought it was really good last year. I'd been to games in Madison Square Garden before, but never like a Big East tournament. And I thought like the electricity of the Big East tournament there still meant something, and it was really pretty cool.
Man, that's what I grew up on. Like I grew up a UConn fan, so we grew up on when it was the first week of March. Like you went to Madison Square Garden to see see UConn play. Like I don't know how much you know about like UConn in the Garden, but like any time that's there, like that's basically their third home. Like they could, if UConn played one home game there every year, like they would sell it out without a doubt.
Yeah.
And the best was when it would be UConn and Syracuse. Like I was at the 6 overtime game, man, and that was insane. because it was completely packed. That was like a – I want to say it was a quarterfinal. And the way that they always do it is that they – like when you buy tickets, you buy tickets for two-game session. But there was nobody there for whatever the other game was in that session. Like it was all UConn and yeah. all Syracuse fans. And nobody left until – I think it was 1:42 in the morning when that game finally ended. And nobody left. It was still packed there.
I believe it. The lighting in that place is just everything about it. It's a palace. I mean, the lighting is unlike any other place. Hinkle's the only one that kind of comes close to it with the cool offset lighting where the court's so lit up, but everything else is pitch black almost. But then Hinkle has the weird skylight up top. It's kind of an old barn, to be honest. But
it's such a cool little venue, though, because it's like you're driving through this neighborhood, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, there's like one of the most famous basketball arenas.
Yeah, my hot take on Hinkle is it's cool to see one time. And then the next time you go there is you're like, yeah, this is an old barn. But
wow. What a hater,
bitter
man.
Old man, roaring.
Look,
you really
cool.
Do sound like B. Snow right now. It's like, I moved to Indianapolis, and now I can't see Hinkle Fieldhouse anymore. I just can't respect it. It's just a barn.
No, it's cool to see one time because of the history. But, like, in actuality, it is not a nice place to watch a game.
What? You know?
It's just not. It's not comfortable. It's not cool. It's not impressive. It's not nice. It's just kind of old, and the score clock doesn't always work, and they have to use air horns sometimes instead of the real buzzer and all that.
Yeah,
other
but
stuff,
that, so. Like that's the attractive part about it.
Rob, it sounds like you're getting in trouble right now.
Yeah, I'm getting in trouble.
Okay.
I gotta run.
Okay, real quick, the nightcap. Tell fans what you're doing there because I like it. I enjoy watching that. Explain it to my fans real quick.
It's a little Facebook video we do at the end of the night to close things off.
Yeah, check it out.
A little live talk about the end of the things that happened during college basketball that day.
All right, he is Rob Doster. We appreciate you joining us, man.
Later, fellas.
You've been listening to another edition of the Dayton and Victory podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. For Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.